Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
And joining us is a, he's an author, a publisher, he's the leader of the United States of America, Ron Chepcik. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Al. How are you doing?
Good. So I hear you're running for president this year.
I've been thinking about it. Throw my hat in. I would probably disappear in the plethora of candidates that are out there. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Everybody, including the janitor in my building here, is running for president.
Well, anybody's qualified, really. It makes it that way.
Well, with the current occupant, that's very true.
Yeah. I mean, you know. I'm sort of glad, actually, there hasn't been a whole lot of celebrity trying to jump in there. Not yet, anyway. Like,
No.
I don't want to see Oprah or any of those people jump in there, you know. But
well, Oprah's been kind of quiet. You know, usually they always bring her name up. Somebody brings her name up, you know, as a candidate. And then, you know, she'll hang around for a while, and then she'll shoot it down, you know, and say, no, I'm not a candidate. But you're right. Well, I've heard, Alex Baldwin's thinking about running, running as a Trump character.
Yeah. That would be pretty good, actually. I'd like that.
SNL is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know why they get so upset about that. I think it's quite funny. I really like how he does that, you know.
Yeah, he does it. He does it very good. But you know, Trump has no sense of humor, so
no.
You can understand why his reaction to it. In fact, he wants to close it down. He wants to use the law to close down comedy and satire.
Yeah, only if it's against him.
Yeah, exactly. Only if it's against him.
You know, and it's funny, you've been writing now books on gangsters or mob and crime and drugs and all that area. And I've always thought of Trump in that same category.
Well, you know, there's been a lot written about, not a lot, but there has been stuff written about his connection to the mob. Loans and all that back in New York City. So it's kind of interesting in terms of history. And what's more fascinating than a gangster, right?
Yeah.
Like Al Capone or Luciano or Pablo Escobar, you know, or even Al Chapo, you know.
Yeah.
Who just got sentenced in February, or not sentenced, he was convicted, and he's got June 25th, he's going to be sentenced, probably spend the rest of his life in an American jail. But what's more fascinating than these guys, you know, and how they become big-time gangsters? I think it's just fascinating. And why they do it, because they never get away with it, you know. You could count the number of gangsters that got away with it on one hand, you know, at that level.
Yeah.
But they do it. And
well, I guess so, it's worth the ride, so, you know.
Yeah, and so I've been interested in, you know, in gangsters all my life. I never started writing about them until I was in my late 30s. And the way I got started I went to Colombia on a press junket. They invited some journalists, and they were trying to improve the image of the country because they still thought they could have a tourist trade at that time. And that's when the war with Escobar and the state was going on. So anyways, I went down there and didn't know anything about the country. Traveled all over the country, and on the last day, I met a woman, and we had a blind date, and that turned into a marriage. about 2 years later, and I was a Canadian. You know, I was Canadian, and I never thought I'd ever get my American citizenship, but I went ahead and got it, and because it would have took forever to get her into the country. And so she came into the country. I got her into the country, and then she became an American citizen later. And now, of course, I got dual citizenship with Canada and the U.S. But I kept going back and back. And, you know, the war on drugs, as far as it related to Latin America, Colombia, getting hotter and hotter. And I was getting assignments like crazy, you know, from magazines and newspapers. And I was developing a network of contacts there that set me up with sources. I ended up interviewing three presidents of Colombia and one vice president who was kidnapped by Escobar. In fact, the president, too, Pastrana, was kidnapped, too, by the Medellin cartel. And it was just crazy. I mean, the country was just, it was like Iraq.
Right.
And, I mean, I remember sitting in the house, my brother-in-law, and hearing a bomb go off, you know, down about half a mile, maybe 3/4 mile down the street. And it was, you know, it was very dangerous. You could get kidnapped for $25. And that happened to some people in the neighborhood, you know, my wife's family and all that. And so from there, you know, I was doing all this writing. I was saying, well, Escobar goes down in 93. You know, he gets killed on a rooftop, and nothing had ever been done about the Cali cartel, who were the real powers in Colombia for a long time. I mean, not many people knew about them because they were very low-key. So from there, I decided to do a book, you know, which took me about 4 or 5 years because I was a professor at a university. And so, you know, I had a full-time job, so I had to, and I couldn't get off like I can now being a full-time writer. So I had to spread it out, and finally did the book, and then that set me off in the area of writing books about crime.
When you're doing something like that, like the book on Cali, and it takes you years, you have to get out there in the field, and you have to get out there and be around all of these people that are doing these things. Now, do you find yourself scared at times, or do you worry about that kind of lifestyle?
I always ask that question, and I always say, I'm not crazy. I'm not going to take any chances, you know. And I have been in situations where I just backed out because I thought it was too dangerous. And, you know, I've covered Northern Ireland before I discovered Colombia. I was reporting on Northern Ireland, and I interviewed the IRA, ultra volunteer individuals, that's the Protestant side in Northern Ireland. So I have a lot of experience in dealing with situations like that. But I have family there, and I have friends there, and they had my best interests, so they would advise me, you know, about interviews. And I interviewed, you know, a lot of people, like the DEA, for example. I never met a lot of the people. The phone is a great way to do it. Now you have Skype, right?
Yeah.
You can do it on Skype. You have text. You can text people. You can do interviews, complete interviews via text on that. So I was never in a situation where I was scared. I was a little nervous, put it that way, which is a little different than scared. But I never had a situation where somebody pulled a gun on me like they've done on some journalists on that. So maybe I was lucky.
Yeah, I would think, because, you know, people are doing bad things. So when you're first going to get together and do something like this, and you decide you're going to write on a gangland, how do you approach it then?
Well, the way I normally do is, and the other great tool, of course, is the internet. Right? You've got the internet. If I'm going to do a subject, like say, for example, I'm going to do a biography of a gangster, and I don't know too much about, I'll get on the internet and do a so-called Google search, right? Try to find out as much background as I can. And I'm a trained librarian. I have a master's degree in librarianship and a master's in archival administration. So if there's one thing I know something about, it's research, right?
Yeah.
And so I'll end up going to the library, and I'll check some of the databases on the magazines and newspapers, and just collect everything I can on that. And then check for books. See what books are out there on the subject. Hopefully, not much has been written book-wise. That means that your field is open, and makes a better possibility of selling a book. And then I'll read everything, and then make notes. I'll look names of people, who should I interview, possible subject, breakdown of the chapters on that, and maybe places I have to go. And then after I do that, I develop a strategy on how I'm going to tackle the project. And it may involve some travel, so I'll have to try to arrange that. And then at some point, I'll decide that I have enough material, or I can't find any more material. Sometimes that happens too. You exhaust what's available out there, and then I'll sit down and write. And I actually like the writing part of the process better than the research, which is kind of weird because I am trained as a researcher. But I enjoy the writing part of it a lot, and putting all that information together and into something that people can enjoy and get something out of.
Yeah, yeah. Now, with a lot of these programs that talk about these type of gangland and drug cartels and all those stuff, the shows and the movies and stuff, do you find that most of it's pretty accurate when they portray the lifestyle?
I've done a lot of those. I've been on practically every cable channel, doing something on in there. In fact, I think I'm on a program every week. I'm on some program because they keep running them, and it's really weird. I'll get a Facebook message, "Hey, I saw you on TV," and I say, "What?" And I think about, "Oh yeah, that's probably one of those old programs." I ask them what it is, and it's been like 8 years. I've had mixed success with with these programs because they call me on, to be an expert talking head, right? I'm supposed to know something about the subject. And when I first got started doing this, Frank Lucas, you remember Frank Lucas, the movie American Gangster?
Right.
Right. And so he came out, everybody thought he was God's gift to gangland. His story was just amazing and true and all that sort of stuff. But I had researched it, and most of it was BS.
Yeah.
And so they invited me on, and I was sort of contrary. Everybody else was coming up and they didn't know what they were talking about because they hadn't researched them, and they were saying all these myths and absurd stories about what he had done and who he was and all that. And essentially they sort of censored me. I say something like, "Oh yeah, Frank Lucas was a genuine big time gangster," but they would put the first part, but they wouldn't do the second part, the butt part. And then I would explain, why, he wasn't as big as he says he was on that sort of stuff. So, and a lot of these shows, they're not really knowledgeable about crime, the people that do the interviewing and all that.
Right.
And they know just enough to do the show. And so a lot of times you'll see a lot of inaccuracies in the show, and they don't really have the time or the money to correct the errors that they make. So it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
There are some good shows, but a lot of them, you have to take them with a grain of salt in terms
right.
of accuracy.
So now I guess it's just true. You've got an interview coming up with a Chapo lawyer?
Yeah, with on my Crime Beat show, a friend suggested that I interview. He's a fellow lawyer, and I thought, well, I wouldn't get him. He wouldn't want to talk. And he didn't want to talk. I approached him at first because the trial was going on, and that's natural. Lawyers don't talk while the trial's going on. But he said, catch me after the trial. I'd love to come on your show. I said, great. And so I checked him out and waited, and the trial ended, and El Chapo lost, they lost the case, and I contacted him again, and he said, yeah, so we're going to talk about, El Chapo, the man, who he is, and a little bit about what happened in the trial, and then they're going to appeal. There was a Vice article that came out right after the trial, which revealed that a lot of the jurors were accessing the media while the trial was going on, which is a no-no, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to buck that out, and they had their own opinions, about El Chapo being guilty and all that. And he's a big-time gangster and all that, but everybody gets a fair trial, right? In America, that's the principle. So he thinks that he has a good chance of getting. I don't think the verdict turnout, maybe another trial with El Chapo. We'll see what happens on that. And of course, he was big time. He was essentially worth about they estimate about $14 billion when he was arrested. And he's a product of what happened in the drug war. What I was researching, because the success of what happened in Colombia with the takedown of the Medellin cartel and Pablo Escobar and the Cali cartel with the Rodriguez Arguello brothers who headed them led to Mexico becoming the power in the drug trade, and that's why we have all these big-time Mexican drug traffickers, from the mid-90s on that have flooded the U.S. with drugs. And that's an example, too, of the absurdity on the war on drugs, because I think it's much worse now, right, having the center of the drug trade right on your border than it was in Latin America, in Colombia.
Right, right. And are they as well controlled, too, now, Mexican drug lords?
Well, yeah, they're everywhere. I mean, I saw one report where they estimated that the Mexican cartels, and there's so many of them, because the drug trade is so lucrative, they're in over 200 cities. They're entrenched in 200 cities, And it's not just cocaine now, opioids, methamphetamine. The methamphetamine trade was largely epidemic, which, started in the 90s and has hit the United States big. It's largely a Mexican gangster phenomenon. They're largely responsible for that. So the whole situation has gotten worse. And, of course, in Mexico, the corruption, is just as bad as it was in Colombia. In the trial of El Chapo, there was a report. Somebody accused the former president of Mexico, Nieto, of taking a $100 million bribe for letting El Chapo go. On that $100 million bribe, they said. Of course, he denied it. And I don't know if there's any further investigation on it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But it just goes to show you the power of the cartels. Continuing power of the cartels, because that's the way it was in Colombia.
Yeah. Now, Colombia had a big gang war between Escobar and Jerez, right? And that left thousands dead. Do you think that that's going to happen again?
Well, it's been happening. I mean, there's always conflict going on, you know, but conflict going on between cartels, you know, fighting each other for territory. In the Colombia aspect of this whole thing, it's really interesting because eventually, at the end of this war, I call it the biggest gang war in history. It pitted the Medellin cartel against the Cali cartel in a war of survival. Everybody was against Escobar because he had ticked everybody off, you know, the way he had dealt with people, killing his rivals, backstabbing them and all that. And so it became a war, you know, where the state and the gangsters essentially were allies in the war against Escobar, and they finally took him out. And he, you know, he was alone at the end with one bodyguard, and was killed on a rooftop. But it was essentially, you know, the Delta Force of the U.S., you had the Colombian National Police, and you had the Cali cartel with its intelligence, you know, going against, that shows how powerful he was. And they all went against Escobar. And eventually, you know, he was taken down. But it didn't mean anything, because all it meant was that the Cali cartel were now the kingpins of the drug trade. And they had been the kingpins, you know, long before Escobar left the scene. You know, there was estimates that by the early 90s, they had 90% of the cocaine trade. But they were very shrewd about how they went about operating. You know, they kept a low profile. They tried to portray themselves as gentlemen. You know, Los Caballeros de Cali, and you know, they preferred the, have you heard this expression, the bribe over the bullet? You know, they preferred to bribe somebody, but they were just as vicious if they had to be. And you know, they corrupted the country. They almost won the election. It could have been the first narco-democracy in history. In the mid-90s, they put $66 million into Ernesto Samper, who was a presidential candidate, into his campaign. And if it wasn't for the revelation of a cassette that was given to Pastrana, who was you know, running against him, maybe the Cali cartel could have had a foothold in the Colombian government on that. But that turned, you know, the tide against the beginning of the tide against the Cali cartel, and eventually they were taken down.
So where does Colombia sit as far as this type of drug activity now that Mexico is so big?
Could you believe this? Everybody heard of the Medellin cartel, right?
Yeah.
And it's based in Medellin. Medellin is the number one retirement destination for Americans, according to the AARP. You believe that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the number one destination. So a lot of Americans are retiring in the former stronghold of Pablo Escobar, where the Medellin cartel. And Colombia has changed immensely. I mean, it's unbelievable how it's changed. When I was going there, for a long period of time, I couldn't go more than 10 miles outside of Bogota, which is the capital where my family lived, because the guerrillas were operating, and my family was scared of, was afraid that I would be kidnapped, you know, and so I never went there. Now you could travel anywhere. You know, you could pretty well travel anywhere in Colombia, and the kidnapping is down. And essentially, you know, the Colombian traffickers that followed the Medellin and the Cali cartel said, look, this is crazy. You know, it makes you too exposed. And so what they did was they turned essentially the trade over to the Mexicans, and they just supply the cocaine, and the Mexicans distribute it. And so the Mexicans are the ones now. Of course, they make more money, too, you know, on that, but it's more low-key. You know, the drug trade in Colombia is more low-key, although there will always, you know, always be a problem, you know, with drugs because it's, you know, so prevalent.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I guess the war on drugs that Reagan started, or even before him.
Well, actually, it was Nixon, really.
Nixon.
In the mid-70s, you know, and it's always been tied to politics. Nixon declared war because, you know, he needed, a political issue, and the same thing with Reagan. He was not doing too well in the midterms in 82, and so he came up with this and essentially militarized, you know, the war on drugs. I hate that expression, war on drugs. We're dealing with a social problem, drug abuse, right? It's not a war. You know what I mean? Yeah, and it's a crazy term. And also, use the term war on drugs, it means that, you know, somebody's got to lose, somebody's got to win. And, you know, the drug issue is not like that. It's more nuanced, you know, than that in terms of dealing with it. So on that. But, yeah, and so it's essentially been the strategy, you know, since the mid-70s. And if you look at the way money's spent, you know, more than two-thirds of the money is spent on trying to combat supply and only one-third on treatment. And, you know, I think it's been a wrong-headed approach. It hasn't done anything except lead to a loss of life and spending millions and millions of dollars, billions of dollars, wasting billions of dollars, you know, beating your head against the wall, trying to come up with an answer that really can't be, you know, given, I mean, in that way. So, yeah, but fortunately, you know, it's changing now. Marijuana is legal in Canada, right?
Yes, all the way.
And here in the U.S., and medical marijuana is getting the respect that it deserves, because we all know that it does have medicinal properties. And so that's the beginning. You know, it's you still have Neanderthal forces at work, you know, that trying to turn the clock back, but to what? You know, the situation that we had, which hasn't really solved anything and hasn't led to any change, you know, so-called war on drugs.
Yeah. And where do you see it all going now? Do you think Mexico's going to be kind of the center of it all, or is that going to fall apart, or what?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the big drug cartels now are the pharmaceutical companies, right? You know, they're the ones that are responsible for the opioid crisis, you know, as we've seen. So, you know, it's the problem is even worse now because you've got these legal drugs, you know, that are being abused, and you have, you know, big pharmaceutical manufacturers that are helping, you know, to create the problem in order to make big money. So, you know, it's never going to go away. You know, it's never going to go away. It's always going to be, you know, drugs of some kind, right? You just look at the history of the war on drugs, the way drugs, you know, shifted from one drug to another, cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, ecstasy, you know, even in the 60s, LSD was there for a while. So, and it's just part of man's makeup, right? They want a high. Reality is too tough for a lot of people, and they want to deal with it in the right of ways, whether it's alcohol or drugs or religion or whatever, you know, they'll come up with something to help make reality a little more palpable.
Yeah, an escape, you know?
Yeah, it's an escape, yeah. That. But, you know, I've always, my philosophy has been, or my view has been, you know, harm reduction, you know, because I was in the Netherlands, and I studied there. I interviewed a whole bunch of people back in the 90s, and their whole approach is harm reduction. You know, we're a puritanical society, given our history, and we want to stamp out sin, right? And but they're a little different. They want to control it. And so they look at the drug problem is that we can never get rid of it. It's like prostitution. You know, you can't get rid of prostitution. So what they do, they put, you know, the prostitutes in the area, the red light district, and control it, you know, give them tests, cut down the venereal disease and that sort of stuff. And that's what they've done with drugs, you know, reduce the harm. And from what I see and what I've read and what I hear, it's worked.
Yeah, it seems to be. It seems to be a better approach, you know. Even Portugal's done that with legalizing.
Yeah, heroin with, you know, giving out needles, for example, right?
Yeah.
On that, and Canada is becoming a leader, right?
Yeah. We do that all the time. And they also have the beer places that they... You can go in as an alcoholic, and they treat you. They give you liquor, and it's all timed and watched, and there's all sorts
of. That's what I call harm reduction.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, trying to reduce the harm to the person and to society, on that sort of thing. Yeah, it's kind of ironic because, you know, I'm a product of the '60s, so, you know, I had my share of drugs and all that, but I don't even, you know, even think about marijuana anymore and all that sort of stuff. So I have no personal interest, you know, in it myself, you know, because I don't use drugs, but I really think that you know, this whole movement now towards legalization is really good, and it's really a beneficial change that is going to lead us in a better direction as a society.
Well, it's, you know, hopefully it all goes in the right direction. So, so how long what further are you going to do on this type of research? Are you going to keep on going through the Mexican cartels pursue that, or are you going a different direction?
Well, I grew up about 120 years old.
Yeah.
I'm still interested in the subject. I've got a really good possibility of doing a book with an English drug lord. I can't talk about it because he's still in prison. I'm waiting for him to get out of prison. But I'm more interested in screenplays now. You know, so I've been writing, you know, screenplays on crime. And I'm moving in a new direction, I guess the way to put it, in terms of my writing. But I'm still interested in crime. You know, I'm still interested in the whole subject of crime. And I'll be writing about it, but I'll be doing, like, screenplays. And eventually I hope to write a novel. You know, I've got some ideas, but there's only, you know, so many hours in a day, right? And
right.
You got to make a living.
Yeah.
That's something that makes money, you know, puts food on the table. So, but I'm going to write maybe one book, more book, I think, if this works out with the English drug lord. And if that works out, then I think I'll do that, but I definitely want to see my name on the screen, because it's always been a dream of mine, you know, ever since I saw Roy Rogers as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, Gene Autry and all that when I was growing up, and I always thought it would be great to see your name on a big screen. That's, you know, that's not something I'm going to do.
Well, keep on working, and it might happen.
Yeah.
You know.
I should think you're going to be on my show, right?
Someone's forcing me to be. Yeah, I'm booked on in
April 18th.
Yeah,
and we have a little chat. You're a resident expert on Canada, so I come here and you give the Canadian perspective of what's happening in America for about 5 minutes, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, it's an endless thing going on. So
yeah. On you that thing.
Yeah.
But anyways, I appreciate being on.
Yeah, and what's now, give people your contact information or website and all that so they can find
it. The website, www.ronchepcik.com, That's my my website. That's probably the best place to go to gather information. I'm on Facebook too. If you're on Facebook, you know, friend me. I'm a very friendly guy, and I'll friend you back, and we can go from there.
You're like Joe Biden.
yeah, except less touchy.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I should mention too that the crime show artistfirst.com is the crime show where Alan will be on, and this week we got Al Chappell's lawyer, so that should be interesting.
Really interesting stuff you do. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. And we'll have, of course, that, and we have your books and site put on our site as well, so people can just click on it. And
you had a great show, and I enjoyed being on.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Ron. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, then. And good luck with your writing, too.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.